All right, back here on the Rich Keefe Show, WEEI. Let's continue our Celtics conversation. We turn to the Harbor One Hotline. Our buddy Nick Fryer from DraftKings joins us now. Fry Guy, how are you, good sir?
I am doing well. It'd be better if I didn't miss Would You Rather Wednesday when I was driving back from my comic shop. I actually got out of the car and missed it, so I'm a little bummed about that, but otherwise I'm good.
Wow. Well, sick brag about the comic shop, though. That's pretty good. What'd you
lucky
get?
Lucky me, right?
What'd you get, anything?
I got Inferno Girl Red. That's that new Massiverse stuff. So that's Radiant Black, Rogue Sun, you know, all that stuff we tell you about. Right. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty good.
Okay. Fryer's also your guy for comic books. I know a lot of listeners are maybe rolling their eyes, but there's some good stuff out there. And if you're into it, check out Fryer's TLDR podcast as well. But on the Celtics, Fryer, the big talker today is how that game ended last night and Joe Mazzulla not calling timeouts. You know, he had an answer for it in the post game. I don't really agree with it, but what did you think of how Mazzulla handled the end of last night's game?
Well, before I say anything about Mazzulla, I want to apologize to all the people who went and bet on the Celtics to cover at +3. I had them at +3, and I thought, okay, hey, wow. The game, look, money line, someone put a big bet before the game on money line. I thought that was a reasonable bet. Clearly was a reasonable bet. But then we see the game end, that final play, but someone gets, I think it was Grant Williams, gets a foul in with like 3 seconds after whatever it was.
Terrible.
Then another foul, and then the guy makes the one free throw, then it's a push in the end. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that's
it
terrible.
It was absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. So if you got it 4.5, that's great. But other than that, brutal.
Awful.
But yeah, with the timeout, I mean, look, I understand you want to let Tatum do his thing and let him go to work, but that was just like, you know, you're going up the floor like it's a tie game, like you have a little bit of luxury, like you can force them into a stake more so. But it's like, no, they're fine. Like, as long as you're not pulling up for a three, like, there's still going to be overtime. We're going to be good. So I understand you got to let the players play. But one thing we learned from Udoka last year when he was, you know, doing his job was like, no, sometimes you got to take control. Sometimes you got to actually coach. And that's what Spoelstra does so well. And that's why the Heat continue to thrive in the post-LeBron era.
You think Joe Mazzulla will definitely be the head coach? Like, at the end of the year, they'll take the interim title off? Or do you think that's still up in the air?
I mean, they haven't done it yet. So it seems like it's going to take some time. But I'll tell you what, if they're not going to do it, why is he going to stick around? I mean, I get that he still has some stuff to learn, and he got thrust into the situation much faster than he probably should have, just from a, like, you know, career trajectory standpoint. I'm not saying he couldn't do it. Obviously, he's done a great job, but there are clearly some things he still has to learn. So yeah, why would he stick around? I mean, right. I get maybe you could do it 1 year and maybe try and go for a ring, so then you have that little bit under your belt, but if you want to get that money and you want to go somewhere that's like a decent, you know, on the rise franchise, we hear about how he is with some of these veterans who are still not that old, like Marcus Smart talking about him and everything the other day. Clearly, he's got something brewing.
Speaking of getting something brewing, Marcus Smart, I don't know if you saw it, but he tweeted out, this has been on my mind now all night, he tweeted out some video of him kind of in like the shadows, and then it kind of like pans up. He's holding a box of some sort, and then his announcement is 1/30/23, which is this Monday. You have any idea what the hell's going on there?
I have no idea.
All right. No, I know. It's driving me nuts. Yeah, I got to move on, but I was just curious as to what that is. It's some big announcement. They're not playing a game that day, so it's not like, oh, I'm returning from an injury, which also would be pretty silly. He's got to be got
like
some
product. Conspiracy segment.
I know. Yeah, well, that's what we'll do. We'll just take stabs at it until he actually announces what's going on. But speaking of Smart, he's usually very synonymous with defense. And one of the stories of this season, despite having the best record in the league, they haven't played consistently the defense that they did a year ago. How big of an issue is that to you?
Well, I mean, the big thing is, of course, the health for everybody in all of it. I mean, Robert Williams, obviously, they didn't have him to start the year, and they have him now, but still kind of managing him. I think when you look at the guys that the Celtics have been attached to, Jakob Poeltl being one of them, like, you're trying to address the situation to where you're still, you know, not thin at down low, but you have Robert Williams where if he gets injured, it's going to be a huge issue for you going into the postseason because we know how impactful he is as a rim protector. Mm-hmm. And then Al Horford, as much as he's still good, like, he's not who he was when he first came to the Celtics in terms of energy level and durability. He needs to be managed. So you need to have somebody else who can help share the load. And I think just in general, you're going to benefit from that. Not just, you know, on a night where Al Horford has to take a night off, or maybe Robert Williams, you know, is injured and trying to play, you know, whatever 15 minutes if he can. Just having another big like that is going to go and provide a lot more stability where you can manage over the course of the season and not let anybody's workload get too heavy. But by and large, I still think that they're going to put it together defensively. You still have Smart. Adding Malcolm Brogdon to the mix, I still think is going to be helpful. I know he's not been available much recently, but still, like I don't have too much concern with that. And then the offensive firepower that you have is just,
yeah,
bringing up Brogdon. I mean, it's just having him in the role that he's in right now is ridiculous.
No, it definitely is. The trade deadline is 2 weeks from tomorrow, and it sounds like Jakob Poeltl, a lot of people have been talking about Poeltl for a couple of weeks. He seems like kind of the no-brainer. Is there anybody else you like? Or on the other side of it, what would your outlook be if they didn't make any moves?
Honestly, Hurdle's the one I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you can't get him, you know, I think really getting another big just from a depth standpoint is really the only thing that I think they need to do from a move standpoint. Because, yeah, you know, look at what happened with Derek White last night, right? Like, he goes off for 20-something points, and you never need him to do that. And if you get into a postseason situation where you need him to do that because a bunch of guys are hurt, well, there's nothing that a move at the deadline was going to do to save you. Like, mm-hmm. Just you're in an unfortunate situation. But you have so much offensive firepower, and the talent that you have defensively too, as much as they haven't been what they were last year, I mean, and you have sharpshooters too. Like, that's the other thing. Grant Williams, like, he shot 41% last year, and now, yeah, he's still right around that, just under it. But it's insane seeing him, and then White is not that, but he's, you know, still a usable offensive player on any given night. And again, Brogdon is like a fringe all-star kind of guy, and he's not playing a six-man role. I'll be stunned if he doesn't win sixth man of the year.
Yeah, no, he definitely should be in the mix. Brogdon is shooting 45.5% from three. Horford shooting 42.6. Grant Williams shooting 42. Sam Hauser just under 39. Like, yeah, they got plenty of guys that can fill it up. So, yeah, that has not been a problem for them. Now, one problem for Tatum and Brown in the playoffs last year, and then in some of their losses this year. And again, the losses have been few and far between, but it's now back-to-back. The turnover issue, is that one where they can overcome that, or is that something that they really need to fix for them to go on and win the entire thing?
Well, I honestly do think the addition of Malcolm Brogdon is, yeah, part of that, because you added a guy who is, as much as he can score and can play defense and be versatile on that end of the floor, I look at him first and think, okay, you've added another ball handler to the mix. And we've seen how much that has impacted Tatum and Brown over the course of the season. And that's why last night, like, yeah, I was thinking they can still win it, even though you don't have your two of your primary ball handlers in the mix. You still have Derek White. And obviously not having Jaylen Brown was didn't help. But it's like, you know, when you have one of those guys in the mix, it takes such a load off of Tatum, where he can go and create offense off the ball, and you know, they can set screens for him, where, you know, you're getting double teamed last night, like on that play at the end there, where he again, like, going back to the timeout stuff, mm-hmm. It was just wild. But no, having additional ball handlers in the mix, I think, especially for Jaylen Brown, we saw how his dribbling was last year in the postseason when they put the pressure on him. It just makes a big difference for him. And now you're not talking about, like, Tatum having to think even more as a facilitator. He can think off it like attack mode and then facilitate as it comes to him, and not try and, like, appease Brown and make sure he's still getting it. So you have someone like Brogdon or Smart who's got, or White even, who are trying to make sure those guys are getting taken care of and being a facilitator first.
Talking with Nick Fryer, who covers the NBA for DraftKings. And with that, you're always talking about odds and lines, prop bets, futures, including the MVP race, where it looks like Jokic, and this is fluid, they update this all the time, Jokic is the favorite once again. I'm curious if the voters would give it to him for a third straight year. How serious or how good of a bet would a Jason Tatum MVP future be right now? Because I think he's in a lot of places has slid down to third, so you would actually get a decent bang for your buck if you were to bet on Tatum.
Yeah, I'm trying to actually pull that up right now for you, but I can't get it on DK Sportsbook. My phone's being annoying, but yeah,
okay.
I mean, I think it's a reasonable bet for Tatum right now, but I will say, where Luka opened up to start the season as the favorite, I would imagine he's second on the book right now. I would lean towards him at this stage just because he has put up some cartoonish numbers and he is popular, like, from a media standpoint too. And that is a thing that you got to, like, you're right to ask that question, where it's like, would they give it to him for a third consecutive time? I think it's hard to kind of justify that, especially when there's not a championship in the mix for that guy. As much as it's based on what they do in that regular season, you cannot tell me that people don't consider stuff that's outside of that season, that surrounds the postseason. Obviously, the voting for this happens before the postseason, but looking at the previous years, I think that happens with across all sports. So I would not be going with Jokic at all. Like, I've thought all year, like, no, there's no way he's getting it. It would take a lot. And I think Luka has done a lot on his end, and he is at the center of things there. I know Christian Wood has been a huge addition for them. Spencer Dinwiddie is nice too, but I think Luka, I thought it was going to be Embiid year coming in.
Yeah.
And he's done well, but it's looking more and more like Luka.
Yeah. Embiid's made a real push this month. He's been awesome. Giannis is always a guy that you got to consider, although he's fallen down. I still think if the Celtics finish the year with the best record in the NBA, that could be a nice tiebreaker for Tatum. So if you can get him now at like +800 or whatever, like, all every book is a little bit different, but if you can get him at something like that, I don't think that's bad.
There's probably worse ways to spend your money. I will give you that. The one that I was most interested in for the Celtics coming into the year, I mean, I was very high on Brogdon when it came to him for sixth man of the year. I just think that that's such a like a demotion for such a talented player. As much as I think being a sixth man is not a demotion, really, it's not a fair way to put it. But either way, you get my point. I thought that Mazzulla was going to be something that was a bet that was going to be worthwhile. I think the value for that right now, last I checked, it was like, I think it was still plus money, but it was like +170. So you're not going to get that value you could have gotten earlier in the year. But he was still pretty high up, like right when the season started. He was in a position to succeed because it wasn't like a situation where, like, Jacques Vaughn has kind of walked into in Brooklyn, or walked back into, I guess, in Brooklyn, because he was an interim head coach twice.
Right, right.
But that whole thing, unbelievable. But he's walking into a messy situation, and it's going to be really hard for him to go and, you know, turn them into the juggernaut that we would expect them to be, the flawless juggernaut, I guess. But the Celtics, they were already in a good spot. They already had a good team. They had good chemistry. It was, obviously a blow for them at the beginning of the season. But you have a guy who's part of the system they all like, and I felt like he was in a position to succeed when it came to, as much as he was all good for him, it's still a difficult spot to walk into. So I thought the narrative and everything was there, and I'll be stunned if he doesn't win it this year.
Which would be amazing, as still being the interim coach to also be the NBA coach of the year, which has got to be pretty wild. What do you make of the All-Star format this year, which I happen to really like, where they've been doing the draft for the last 5 years, but this year they're going to have the two team captains pick the team right before the game, like you're playing pickup.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Why not? I mean, the All-Star game, I think it's Elam scoring, I believe it's what it's called.
Yep.
But that addition has made the game a lot better, I will say. I know All-Star games, by and large, are tough. The NBA one, it has, by and large, been really tough, not worse than the Pro Bowl. But I why not? Like, do as much as you can to make it fun. Like, for us, when the game starts, that's probably more for the kids because it just gets so out of control. But I'm here for that. And then see what the trash talking, the live reactions, all that stuff.
Guys are going to be pissed in the moment, because normally if you're like the last pick, you're pissed. But then by the time the game rolls around, you're probably like, whatever. But now it's going to be like so immediate and fresh that, LeBron and Giannis thought you were the worst All-Star. Like, that's going to be a frustrating thing.
Oh, yeah.
Fry, you're also a big baseball guy. Last night we got the great 2023 Hall of Fame class announced, and it was just Scott Rolen, former third baseman, Gold Glover, Scott Rolen. Does it even matter? Like, I tell myself I'm not going to get upset about it, and then I immediately do once I start talking about it. But just Scott Rolen getting in, has this thing completely lost its luster, or do you even care about it anymore?
I do care about it, actually, to the point where, like, Emerson was cutting me off the other day on the sweat because I was going too long on all this. I care very much about all this. So, Scott Rolen, does he deserve to get in? Yes. Manny Ramirez now.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Fryer. Scott Rolen deserves to get in the Hall of Fame?
Yes. I'm going to explain myself.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
So, Manny Ramirez and those guys just listed off of them, they deserve to get in, too. because I understand the argument of the Hall of Very Good. If this was like, if you look back and say that about like the guys from, you know, years way past, then I think you got a, you know, you got some other issues. But if you're talking about now, I get your argument. But you, what you have to consider is, okay, we don't want to hold it against the guys who were the best from this era, even though they were on PEDs. I think that's fair. You have to, like, they were a big part of the game. They, like, you know, they helped revive it with McGuire and all that kind of stuff, and Bonds and what he did, right? But at the same time, there were other guys who were playing at a disadvantage because they didn't use the steroids. So those guys, like a Roland, and I'm going to say, like a Torrey Hunter, those are guys who deserve to be recognized too, because they went and still did really well. And for those two guys specifically, were very good defensively. They still thrived in those, in that situation, maybe not to the degree of those guys, but they didn't go and use the drugs.
So my my problem with that argument is we don't know for sure who was and who wasn't on the sauce. Like, there are some guys that you're pretty sure were. There are other guys that probably could have hit it a whole lot better. Or, you know what, you hit 30 home runs, you didn't hit 40 home runs, so you're not going to you'll pass the sniff test that way. So I don't know who did or who didn't. I usually just look at who were the the top 10 MVP guys or the top 10 Cy Young guys. And Scott Rolen was a top 10 player in the National League once in his entire career. So that to me does not make a Hall of Famer. I understand your point about the guys blocking him, but there wasn't nine roided up guys every year blocking him. Like, he had chances to be better than he was, or to at least finish higher in those voting.
You want to hear a fun fact about Scott Rolen that I didn't know until today?
Of course I do.
He played 7 years with the Phillies, 6 years with the Cardinals. He was an all-star primarily, most with the Cardinals. Guess who was an all-star with most after the Cardinals?
Wait, who was an all-star with the Cardinals with him the most?
Sorry, I guess I phrased
What's
that
the question? What's the... Please repeat the question.
You know, I will leave you to ask the questions, and I'll just tell you the answer right away. Scott Rolen was an all-star most with the Cardinals. He spent the most time, though, with the Phillies.
Got it.
However, he got two All-Stars with the Reds, despite only being there for like 3 or 4 years, and was only an All-Star with the Phillies once.
Okay. Is that helping,
is that helping or hurting
his case?
It was I said you want to hear a fun fact.
Oh, my God. I was pretty sure the fun fact was going to actually like benefit his case a little bit.
It doesn't benefit his case, but he was an outstanding fielder. And he was a good hitter, and I already made the case. When it comes down to, you want to say, okay, he was just a really good player, not a Hall of Famer. The argument is the guys that were using the steroids, because he's not just, yes, you're right, Rich. He's not, we don't know, like, Scott Rolen was never linked to steroids.
Could
he have still been? Possibly.
Maybe.
Could he have still on him? Maybe. But we know that he was facing a lot of guys who was also, maybe, you know, a lot of guys who probably didn't deserve to be at that level, or guys who were just became so much tougher to deal with because they were on the steroids.
It was a wild time. Can you explain to me how his first year on the ballot, he got 10% of the vote, and then this year he got 76%?
There's no question the system's broken.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm sure there was a portion of those voters who maybe had 10 people on their ballot and was like, Scott Rolen is not the 10th among the 10 best guys here, but he still does deserve to be in here. There's definitely some people like that. This is the majority. There's no way. You know, they should be making this field a lot smaller. You only get like 5 votes or something to that degree, and then maybe adjust, you know, the percentage of votes that you need to get, because it's ridiculous. And then then you see things like Bronson Arroyo getting votes. And hey, like, I like Bronson Arroyo as a kid.
Sure.
Sure. Does he deserve? I didn't deserve to be on the Hall of Fame ballot. How do you get blown away by some of the guys that are eligible for this thing?
Oh, I know. And then they even like put out today, they're like, and here's the guys that are going to be joining the ballot next year. And I forget who they even were, but it was like one guy that maybe you would consider, and like a whole bunch of just fine players. But yeah, it's a mess.
Bartolo Colon's on there.
Oh, good. Well, you know, the guy, he had his moments. You know, he definitely did.
He was good early on. No, Maurer is the only one for me on there that I think is like has to be a lock for everybody. He's one of the best offensive catchers of all time. The other guy that I do think is worthy is Adrian Beltre, but I can understand pushback on him.
Oh, no, I like Beltre and Maurer are both good ones. Like, without diving through all their stats and stuff, they feel like Hall of Famers to me. Like, nobody on this year's class, with the exception of Manny and A-Rod, who I knew weren't going to get in, but those are the only two that, like, felt like real Hall of Famers.
Not Wagner?
Yeah, I'm a no on Wagner. I think a closer is important, but, like, you got to be really, really nasty to be a Hall of Famer for me.
Okay. Well, I mean, him and K-Rod both have some pretty similar numbers, and they both have some of the higher strikeout percentages of of closers.
Sure.
All time. Like K rates, excuse me.
True. Fair enough. Hey, it's all good. It's a good debate. I'm glad people are still passionate about it because I feel like it's kind of faded a little bit. Like once Bonds and those guys came off the ballot, it was like, all right, forget it. Like you kind of knew that great players weren't going to get in, but kind of it is what it is. So there you go. Nick Fryer, Scott Rolen defender. He wants Jakob Poeltl. There you go. Good first appearance on the Rich Keefe Show, Fryer. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rich. Talk to you soon, brother.
All right, good stuff. Nick Fryer from DraftKings. Also, if you're into comic books, in all seriousness, if you're into comics, the TLDR Comic Book Club podcast, Fryer and his buddy Dr. Joe do a great job breaking that stuff down weekly. And yeah, good stuff with the NBA. I'm sure we'll be talking to him again.